What am I doing down here?
I suspect some of you are wondering that. Why am I not in the pulpit today? If you listen carefully to the story from the 24th chapter of Luke that Barry just read, you'll have noticed that it was a communion story. For me, the highlight of the tale of the encounter on the road to Emmaus is what happens when Cleopas and his friend invite Jesus to share the meal with them. We hear that he takes the bread and he gives thanks and he breaks it. And then Jesus is made known to them. That language, I suspect, is very familiar to everybody here because we say these words during the communion service. And these are the words that we see in Luke 22 when Jesus shares that last meal with his disciples. It's in coming together around the table that Jesus is made known to us. And this is something that the Christian church has believed for 2,000 years. Now, communion is meant to be an instructional service. We talk about things. We talk about the bread. We talk about the cup and the church. Assumes that everybody knows what's going on and why we're doing things. But that's not really a fair assumption, is it? So today, we're going to spend a few minutes looking at the communion service. We're going to try to understand what's here at this table, why we gather around it, and what this all means for us. Communion has always been at the heart of Christian worship. Go right back to the beginning when the first Christians were gathering. They were meeting in people's homes and they were sharing meals. People would bring bread and they would bring wine. It was a true communion. Now, in those early days, it was very easy for everybody to gather for a meal. There weren't that many Christians. But over time, as the word got out and people came to believe, the numbers grew. And not everybody could be accommodated at a dinner. So services began to emerge. Rituals were developed, centered on the bread and the wine. Things that people still brought to be shared. People would come together from different places, different walks of life, rich and poor, slave and free, all coming together. And for the first couple of centuries, they met in people's homes. And then everything changed when Constantine decided that Christianity was going to be the religion of the Roman Empire. The faith came out into the open in a really big way. Church, which had been about people, started becoming about buildings. Church moved from the home to the basilica. But the communion, the Eucharist, was still at the center of worship. But as the faith developed and grew, things were elaborated. Services became more complicated. People started being ordained into different offices in the church. And roles that had been shared by everybody began to be reserved for certain people. And before we knew it, only the clergy could administer communion. And as the growth of the clergy was taking place, those church buildings were growing too. And they were getting big. Jesus was talked about less as good shepherd and more as king. And as this happened, the table began its journey to the axe. And there, it turned into an altar. So you had the clergy presiding over the communion back at the altar. And the people were cut off. But at least they were receiving communion. But as the centuries passed, the distance between the people of God and these gifts of God grew wider and longer and greater. People began to discuss what these things meant. Were they symbols? Did they actually embody Jesus? And as these conversations took place, there was a sense that the laity weren't good enough, weren't holy enough to enjoy communion. Got to the point where people might get to have communion once a year. And they would have the bread, not the cup, just the bread. It was believed that the blood of Christ was present in the bread. And then it got to the point where people might not even get to have the elements. No, instead, they'd be held aloft in something called a monstrance. People could see it. And they might see it once a year. And whole elaborate liturgies developed around this. The Feast of Corpus Christi, and there'd be parades. People would see the host, but they wouldn't actually taste it. In part because people in the church were teaching that the laity weren't holy enough. And superstitions had developed around it, and people were actually scared to come into contact with it. Think how far we've traveled from the beginning, where people are all gathering together and sharing the elements. And then there was an earthquake, 1517. Martin Luther nails his theses to the door of the church. And among the things that is seen anew in the Reformation is communion. Now, it's seen in many different ways, of course. Protestants all having different views. There were some people like Luther and Cranmer who thought that communion should be shared once a week. There were others like Zwingli who thought maybe four times a year would be more than enough. But regardless of the frequency, most Protestants felt that the emphasis should be given not to the Lord's Supper, but instead to the proclamation of the word, to preaching. And that's evidence. Here in our sanctuary, we've got this purpose-built pulpit and a purpose-built lectern and pews that are set up so people can hear the word. In the late 19th century, people began to look at things anew. And something called the liturgical movement that started then and is still ongoing today began to unfold. People began to experiment and to do things differently. And one of the things that was lifted up more and more was communion. Now, I know for a fact that people in this church have experienced communion in different ways. There is no one official way to do communion. In some places, we come forward and we share the elements by intention. In other places, communion might be served in the pews. Sometimes people are passing the elements one to another. But there are certain things in the service that are always the same, things that trace right back to the very beginning. And so we have the bread. And we have the wine, or in our case, juice, grape juice. We have up front today one loaf and one pitcher to represent the unity that we are to enjoy and experience in communion. We have one tray of bread. It's all gluten-free. So everybody can share the same loaf. And we can all share the unity that's made known to us in Jesus Christ. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to begin our service of Holy Communion. And I'm going to read an invitation. And the words I say are different from the words that my predecessor here said, and I suspect my successors will say. But there will still be themes running through it that you'll always hear. An invitation calling people to come forward. In the invitation we extend here, we make clear that this is an open table. In some churches, communion will be restricted only to those who have been baptized. This is a hot debate in church circles, even in the UCC. We have an open table here because Jesus didn't administer a test about baptism. And it's not our table. It's Jesus' table. We don't have the right to shut off people from the gifts of God. So we open the table to all who feel called. And to build on that sense of welcome, we offer to give people a blessing if they don't want to share in the elements, so they can still participate in communion. Now, we've been sharing communion by intinction here for the last couple of years, and that arose after much discussion in the diaconate. And the idea is to create a service with movement and flow that brings everybody here to the table. And for us right now, it's symbolic because we don't gather around the table. Ideally, we would. If we didn't have these two pews up front, we could do that. And that would help us to experience even more deeply and fully the notion of sharing a meal. The Sanctus that we sing after the prayer is offered is the one part of the communion service that was never dislodged from the people. The whole notion of singing a Sanctus goes way, way back in worship to before the church, and the people have always held that. We sing ours joyfully, and it's meant to be a celebration. Communion is holy, and communion is sacred. But communion should ultimately be a party, because of the wonderful blessings we have to celebrate, because of the gift we've received in Jesus. After we sing the Sanctus, we hear the words of institution. We break the bread. We'll pour the cup. And we'll think back not only to what happened at the Last Supper, which we reference in our prayer and in our words of institution, but hopefully also to that moment after Easter, when a couple of followers of Jesus, who had been hoping so desperately for everything to change. We're still trying to get the message about what had happened. And at the table, they understood. Remember what they said? After the bread is broken and Jesus has made himself known to him, they reflect on what their experience had been before. They sat down at the table. Our hearts were burning. When was the last time your heart was on fire? When was the last time coming to the table made you want to sing? This is the joyful feast of the Lord. It's not a cross for us to bear. It's not an obligation for us to discharge. This is the opportunity we share with Christians around the world throughout the ages to be present with God and with one another. My hope and my prayer is that this day and in Sundays to come, our hearts will all be on fire when we share this meal. And I suspect we'll tweak things and change things and experiment. But that's okay. Because no matter what form this meal takes, God will be present right here for all of us in the breaking of the bread and the sharing of the cup.